Hey, welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich. Once again, conversations with people from all forms of performance and the arts, from voiceover talents and broadcasters to actors, producers, musicians, writers. We get to share ideas and insights into the work these wonderful people do and the joy and passion they bring to it. Today's guest is longtime broadcaster and one of the most successful podcasters, Mike Carruthers. Over 20 years ago, Mike created Something You Should Know as a short-form radio feature and syndicated it to hundreds of radio stations around the U.S. and Canada. The programs are still heard on radio today, and after over 8,000 episodes of the feature, Mike created the long-form podcast version of Something You Should Know, and it sounds a little bit like this.
Today on Something You Should Know, do you know your blood type? Do you know why you have a blood type? The answer may surprise you. Then, it may seem like the world is going to hell in a handbasket, but we're actually in an age of enlightenment.
Diseases are being eradicated. Smallpox no longer exists. Polio is almost gone. Kids are going to school worldwide. 90% of people under the age of 25 can read or write. It's just unprecedented in human history. There are fewer wars.
Also, if you use a hairdryer, you may want to adjust how you hold it for health reasons. And swearing. Why do we swear? And why do younger women swear more than ever?
As you go up in age, the proportion of men versus women is quite high. And as you go down in age, women under 25 swear just as much as men. And don't even realize that there once was this idea that women didn't swear.
All this today on Something You Should Know.
Well, I don't know if I should ask Mike Carruthers anything, because you probably know everything. Do you know everything, Mike?
Yeah, 1997, I finally hit it. I know everything.
Well,
you know what it is? It's like there was an episode of Married with Children where Kelly Bundy, who wasn't too bright, her head got so full that if she learned anything new, an old fact would fall out, so she forgot her name. And it's more like that. It's more like there's a few things in there, and the new ones come in and the old ones go out.
Well, it's called hard drive space in the brain. You've got plenty left, my friend. And I want to congratulate you, because for years we were sort of colleagues in a way, working on the same radio station. You were on hundreds. I was on one, WBZ in Boston. And tell me about how this whole thing got started. It's about 20 years past. How you get into this feature business and why Something You Should Know.
Well, Something You Should Know was actually on the air for 37 years and 36 of them on WBZ. And it got started years ago when there used to be a TV show called Our Magazine with Gary Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife worked on that show. It was a Group W Productions when Group W used to own BZ. And it was a show that had a lot of interesting information in it, but it was an hour long a day. Also, at that time, I was working on a radio show called Record Report with Robert W. Morgan, which was a 90-second daily show about rock and roll artists and music and whatnot. And I thought, well, what if you had a daily show, but not about rock and roll artists, but about information that people could use? So those two ideas kind of merged together and became the feature, the 90-second feature that was on BZ for so many years, Something You Should Know.
And, of course, a go-to, must-listen-to feature, which is not easy to do in that era or today, to have something that is captivating and brings people in. But yours certainly does, because it is about so many different topics. And were you a generalist before this, or have you become sort of a curious guy because of it?
Well, at the time that it started and throughout, up and through till the mid-90s, I was just a rock and roll disc jockey. I was playing the hits on radio stations in L.A. And then in Connecticut as well when I was younger. And I really just wanted to do a nationally syndicated radio show and really would have done anything that was successful. But I happened upon that idea. So I guess I'm a generalist to answer your question. I like to know a little bit about a lot of things, which is dangerous sometimes. But I like learning all the things I learn.
Well, one of the things now that's so cool about what you're doing, you've taken this concept and you've morphed it into a longer form piece that's now a podcast that's huge in popularity. Do you find it freeing to have more time to dedicate to a particular topic, to delve more deeply than, say, the 90 seconds?
Yeah, it's It's a good point. And it is more freeing. It's more work. And it's also, I thought it would be more like the radio show. And I know that I believe that, for example, WBZ and several other radio stations still run the feature, but it stopped production last May. There are no new ones. And I stopped it because I was spending so much time and making so much more money with the podcast than I was with the radio show. It just seemed to make sense to go in that direction. But yes, it's more freeing, it's more fun, and it requires a different approach, because when I would interview people for the radio show, I basically would interview them for 15 or 20 minutes in hopes of getting 90 seconds out of that. And almost any conversation, you can pull a 90 seconds out of 20 minutes of any conversation. But for the podcast, it's the whole interview. So the whole interview has to hold up throughout. So it's harder. It means fewer guests make the grade. And so it's tougher. It is tougher.
Well, have you noticed over the years that you have some fallback guests, go-to people, experts that just come through for you every time? Because when I used to do the late night show, and I've had hundreds and hundreds of guests, I would have regulars that would always come through for me. Do you have the same?
Yeah, you have to have some of those guys that'll come through in a pinch when you're like, everybody else has abandoned ship, or they're not available, or they're all sick or whatever. You've got to have that handful of people that, you know, you can pick up the phone and say, look, I need a favor. I need an interview. Yeah, I have a few of those. Yeah. I haven't had to call on them too often, but yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
This is a very broad question, but what, in your estimation, makes for a positive interview, a good interview, I should say? What's the secret sauce that Mike Carruthers uses to bring these people out?
That's a really good question, and I don't know that I know exactly how to answer it, but what I hope to get out of every interview is something that I didn't know, and so often happens, and I'm sure this happens to you too when you interview so many people. At the end of it, you think, well, I could have told you that. I mean, there was nothing new there. I mean, it was all pretty basic stuff. So I want to hear something that I can go, wow, I didn't know that. That's really interesting. How do you know that? Where did that come from? That to me is this. That's the thing that I think perks people's ears up and makes them say, hey, that's pretty interesting, rather than just the same old stuff we've already heard.
Well, they say that when you stop learning, or when you stop being curious, you kind of stop living, and you just sort of take up space. I don't mean to be too blunt about it, but it's true that the people who are pursuing knowledge at any age, at any point in their life, are really having a lot more fun. It's fascinating. And even in this era of the internet, Mike, where people can, quote, Google almost anything, there's still stuff that really lies dormant, and you can dig it out with this feature. I've heard some of these pieces.
Yeah, well, you're right. I think, you know, learning is fun, and it's maybe more fun as a grown-up than when you have to do it in school. But I enjoy learning it, learning all the things that I learned from the people that I learned. And I also learned about learning in the sense that early on, I would get pitched people to be on the show and just figure that everybody had the best of intentions and everybody knew what they were talking about, and really found that that wasn't always the case, that there were people who had a different agenda. They were just trying to sell something, or mainly they were trying to sell something, and there wasn't a lot of science behind what they were saying, or there wasn't much research behind what they were saying. So I got very skeptical and so set the bar a little higher, or a lot higher, for people who wanted to be on the show.
Yeah, me too. You develop that extra sense, that smell test, that, it sounds as though somebody's in it. I remember during the 9/11 horrible post-events that were happening, you know, the several weeks and months after that, there were a lot of guests who wanted to come on to talk about the issues related to the after effects, and we had to weed through some who just wanted to sell books, and it was really interesting. We're talking with Mike Carruthers. Something You Should Know is now a very successful podcast. And let me have you tell our audience how successful it is. Do you have some numbers for us?
Yeah, sure. I'm still somewhat blown away by our numbers. But the February of 2018 was our biggest month or January, I'm sorry, January of 2018 was our biggest month, and we hit 750,000 downloads that month.
That is impressive.
And yeah, it's and we showed up on the iTunes charts, the podcast charts, in December of 2017, and we've never been off them. We're usually in the top 30, sometimes in the top 20, and that really helps drive listenership, because we found, and I didn't know this at the time, that by getting on those charts, that's where people go to find things to new things to listen to. So if you're on the charts, you're much more visible and much more accessible to new podcast listeners.
I want to talk with you about the training you provide, and listeners who are thinking about starting their own podcast can take note. But I did want to ask you about the transition, if it's even seamless for you, or it's a little different. The transition from doing broadcasts to podcast, if you're a broadcaster, is not that difficult. Well, technically, there are things you have to know to get it up there, but I love the fact that I can do what I always did and now have this whole world of cyberspace to do it in.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I'm surprised that I've said this many times. I spoke last summer at the Podcast Movement convention in Anaheim, California, and I've said it to so many people. I'm surprised more broadcasters haven't gotten into podcasting. Certainly public radio people. There's a lot of public radio people in podcasting, but there are not a lot of commercial radio people in podcasting. And I'm not sure I understand why, because as you and I both know, radio is having a lot of problems, and people are losing their jobs or making less money and working harder. And I think podcasting offers a great opportunity for somebody, but it is risky. I mean, you might go into it and fail, but there are, you know, ways to protect yourself. But yeah, I agree with you. It's exciting because I can do what I did in radio. It's a little different, but it's similar enough. It uses a lot of the same skills, and it's a much brighter future.
Indeed. And Mike, you wrote How to Launch a Perfect Podcast, which is an Amazon ebook selling like hotcakes. And you've been spending some of your time helping others and training people in the ways and wherefores of doing this. I guess you've learned the hard way, some of the bumps along the way, but you're sharing a lot of this knowledge with folks, aren't you?
Well, I created this training program. It's 62 videos and some PDFs and one-on-one time with me and some worksheets and all, because it's the training I wished I'd had when I went through this, because I did hit all the roadblocks. And the one thing that kept me going was that what I did in radio, which was short features and trying to syndicate them nationally, there is no future in that. And there was no future for me. So I had no choice, but if I had had a choice, I probably would have thrown in the towel on podcasting a couple of times when I got frustrated. But I was either going to do podcasting, or I was going to have to completely change careers and, you know, maybe go sell real estate or, you know, go work in a bank, or, I mean, I didn't know what I was going to do. So I was highly motivated, I can say, and really wanted to make this work. And I just stuck with it because I had to.
And now you're in the top 30 or so and monetizing it very effectively. Mike, I got to ask you about the voice, because you have a terrific set of pipes, as we say. And I do talk to voiceover artists on this podcast. Did you have any formal training, or are you just a natural, or what?
Listen to you. You're the guy with the voice.
Oh,
I mean, come on. No, I had no real formal training at all. I got involved in radio very early on I was a teenager, and like so many guys are in our era that really loved radio. And no, I've had no formal training, and I did try voiceovers for a while. I did a few things that were fun and interesting. I did a couple of TV things, and I enjoyed it. It's so hard to, you know, you've got to constantly beat the drum. You know, it's every job is a new job. But I had some great gigs. I was the voice of the Back to the Future ride at Universal when you went when you were waiting in line to go on the Back to the Future ride?
Of course. I must have ridden that 50 times in a row. I loved it, so I heard your voice a lot.
Right, and so when you were watching the monitors about how they made the movies and all that while you're waiting to get in the ride, I was one of the voices, or I think two voices on that. I did a TV show called The Best of the Midnight Special for Fox. And I did a lot of those, the making of movies about the movies. A lot of the Steven Spielberg movies, I was the voice of the how they made that movie kind of thing.
Well, that's cool. You dropped a name earlier. I've got to just ask you because radio geekdom here, Robert W. Morgan, huge name and may not be as familiar to people today because disc jockeys are sort of a lost art like the dinosaurs. But tell me a little bit about him because I always heard he was a remarkably talented guy.
He was very talented. I was fairly early in my career when I worked with him in the 70s. I ran the board, was kind of the engineer for this show, Record Report. He was a very difficult guy to get along with. He was pretty temperamental. He'd love you one day and love you less the next. but he was very talented, and I learned a lot from him. I did learn a lot from him. I also learned a lot of things about how not to treat people, but he was a talent, no doubt.
He was in that era though, the 60s and 70s, that's long gone. And those guys are legends in their own field, but you don't see that much anymore because you said it's true. Radio has changed so much. I want to ask you before we close out, if there's a particular episode of something you should know within say the last 6 months or a year that stands out as a real head-scratcher for you, that you went into it thinking you might have an issue, you might have a sense of what's coming up, but it surprised you. Any big surprises out there?
No, you know, I'm often asked that question or what's your favorite episode or all that, and I don't really have one, and I imagine it's similar with you, like when once you're done with an episode, you kind of forget about it because you're moving on to the next one, and I try to make each one really as good as I can make it. So I don't really have that kind of an experience. What I tend to notice better is people who do really good interviews and who are, because as you know, better than most, it's, you can do your best to interview somebody, but if they're not ready and prepared and, you know, have good stories to tell and things to say, it's tough. It's like getting, blood from a stone.
Yeah.
And so, recently I interviewed Daniel Pink, who's, pretty well-known big time author. And he's always a great interview. He's always a really good interview. And, so I notice things like that more, but I don't really have an answer to your question.
Well, not that I want to, but, if I'm ever on Millionaire, that Millionaire game show, can I use you as a lifeline? Cause I have a feeling you'd have a pretty good concept of the answers that I might not know.
There may be better people, but you're welcome too. Sure.
Well, the website, somethingyoushouldknow.net, is tremendous. And I can't congratulate you enough because I'm in the same boat getting into this podcast thing and loving it. And you're an inspiration. Mike Carruthers, thank you so much for joining me and continued success.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced by Chart Productions. Just click the Jordan Rich podcast link at chartproductions.com for more. Please subscribe, download, rate, and review us on Apple and any other podcast platform. Hey, it's great to be with you as always. Thanks for listening. Have a terrific day.